Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
In my best Heath Ledger. And here we go.
Go.
Gal.
Got
that little whiny gal.
Whiny, greasy.
Heath Ledger is as the Joker, of course.
The Joker.
Exactly. All right, welcome into the playbook for a Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook, along with PFW's Eric Scalavino. And week two, you can't get completely to week two until you sort of recap and regroup from week one.
Yeah.
And this is the day that we affectionately know and have known for the past 12 seasons as Nitpick Tuesday. I can't imagine there aren't, I don't know, 3 or 4 nits to pick off of that old sweater in the corner.
I saw some nits that could use some picking when I went through the film yesterday, as I did for my After Further Review feature that I do on the day after the games.
Correct. All right. We'll get to those. We're going to get to all of them as best as we can. But right off the top of the program, I want to let you know that this is your show. This is your opportunity to reevaluate, reassess, take a 48-hour, if you will, respite from the emotion of the game on Sunday, and now give us what you think 2 days later. Keep in mind now that you're only 48 hours away from playing another football game as well with a Thursday night game with the Jets. So, in that regard, let's make sure that you understand how you get in touch with us here in the program. Email address is, as always, webradio@patriots.com. The Twitter is @JRBroadcaster. The Facebook is...
Which we need to get you up to 1,700 by the end of the show today.
Can we do that?
You're at 1,674.
Right. Do need to get up there. All right. I'm going to come up with a prize to get to somebody who's number 1,700 today.
I can give them my Bills Patriots press pass from the other day.
You think that would be a popular get?
If somebody wants it.
Somebody wants that?
Yeah, sure.
All right, we'll give away Eric's Bills Patriots press pass.
It's a visiting official all access pass.
Okay.
I mean, it's a nice souvenir.
That's official. Yeah, you could frame that. It'd be nice, right?
A picture of which I have on my Instagram account, @E_scale.
Okay. All right, we'll see. If you need to go look at it, then you can see what you get.
Check it out.
We can get up
to
1,700. @JRBroadcaster. So
it's like
don't
eBay
forget,
here.
We
go
gotta
check
work
it out.
On this. I'm trying to pimp this hard today, and I just, you know, got to do a better job at the social networking thing, and so let's just go. Let's just get after it. If you really want Patriot stuff, that's what we provide primarily during this time of the season. I also give you some college football and college basketball.
And we digress.
Because those are the two things that I get paid to cover professionally, I'm fortunate to do that. So you'll see an occasion tweet like that. Anyway, @JRBroadcaster. The Facebook page is John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, the last name if you want to submit the friend request. And then, of course, the telephone number. It's a toll-free number, kids. So learn this. Commit it to memory. 855-PATS-500. 855-PATS-500. Or if you want to do it the old-fashioned way, the local number is 508-298-0398. There's so much to get to and probably so little time to do it, but we're going to try to spend most of the first hour of the program dealing with nitpicks and looking back at Tuesday, because that's what we normally do on Tuesday. But we'll also step up our look into the Jets, I think, a bit today because of the shorter work week, if that's okay with you.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll really jump into the Jets tomorrow because we'll have...
That's the only show we'll have.
Yeah, because Thursday we're not here.
Right.
Up leading up to the game, there will be the pregame social, but we won't be here with a playbook on Thursday. All right, so as you look back on it 48 hours ago, you were there.
Mm-hmm.
You saw it all. What's the one thing that lasts in your memory? What stands out at the top of the list right now from Sunday afternoon at Buffalo?
Offensive inefficiency.
Yeah.
And I use that as broadly because it's not just Ridley's fumbles. It's not just the receiver's inability to get open.
It's an overall.
It's not just Tom Brady's misfires.
It's not just the 23 young receivers being 4 of 17, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not just that, you know, Aaron Dobson was inactive, Leon Washington couldn't go. It's all those things. It's just overall offensive, because if it weren't for the offenses, you know, and they weren't terrible, obviously, but they made mistakes at the wrong times. If it weren't for that, I thought the defense held up and did their part. This game could have been over, or at least been a more comfortable win than it turned out to be.
You know, I'm not terribly surprised it was a close game, but my prediction before the game, which was 34-20, and by the way, no one won the media guide. No one hit the right score of 23-21.
Had the Patriots
had the
covering,
Patriots usually winning in a walk. There was one that was close. I got a 27-21 score. That was close. That was as close as I got.
Yeah.
And that's as close, actually, as we may have gotten in a couple of years, to be honest with you. Someone sent in a 27-21. So that's fine. But, you know, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. So, and nuclear bombs.
Why does it count in horseshoes?
Well, because if you get it closer than your opponent on one, then you score a point.
It's like bocce then.
Yeah. Okay. Horseshoes, so it's hand like grenades, and bocce.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And nuclear bombs. I think. Although, I don't know. I've never experienced one.
I don't really want to.
All right. So, at any rate, no one won the median guide, but we'll do that tomorrow. So, save your predictions for tomorrow, since we won't have a prediction Thursday because game day is Thursday. We'll ask for your Jets predictions for tomorrow. And, again, an exact prediction of the score wins a copy of the media guide / yearbook. All right. I got to admit that I'm not surprised, like I said, of the closeness of the game. But like you, I'm surprised at the way that it came about. I kind of felt that Buffalo would score, but you're right. The reason that I missed, I said Buffalo would score 20, they scored 21. So I wasn't far off.
Well,
but the offensive inefficiency is what is I think, really jumping out off the page at this stage of the game. Tom Brady certainly was Tom Brady, and we saw that in the last drive of the game. They chewed up the last 4 minutes and 41 seconds, whatever it was, masterfully.
Well, he was on the last drive. I would say he was inconsistent before.
But there
then.
Was a reason somewhat for his inconsistency, I think.
A little bit. Yeah, I mean.
So you're going to give Brady some of the blame?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, he fumbled on the goal line. He short-hopped.
That's a good one.
Listen, he short-hopped. 9 passes, and he overthrew 8.
Okay.
You know, part of that was that his receivers weren't open, and you know, he didn't want to throw an interception, an easy interception, by throwing it on target. But that's partly his fault.
Okay.
You know, a lot of those he was trying to do a lot of those back shoulder throws to Kenbrell Tompkins, and they weren't working out. You know, part of it is that the throws were off. He bears some of the blame, and I think he would take it.
Could you make the argument that Brady was skipping balls or off target on balls because receivers were not where they should be?
Sometimes, yes. But, I mean, he's not perfect.
Right.
I think we
realize that. And we came down hard on Tom last year for some of his inefficiencies, as you'll recall, with a receiver set that he had. And he was overthrowing guys or underthrowing guys, and we thought he'd lost some arm strength or what have you.
See, one of the things that my job entails on game day is to chart his incompletions, and not just the number, but why they were incomplete, the reason for the incompletion. And I only had two legitimate drops by, you know, balls that were on target right in the receiver's hand in the right spot, and they dropped and they couldn't hold on. Just two. The rest were either way too high and they had to jump and it went through their hands, or it was back
and
they had
to
dive. You mean
like Zach Sudfeld's?
Yeah, that was a bad throw.
He seemed to stumble, though, before that ball hit his hands.
Possibly. The footing was not great, at least on the Patriots' side, all day. There were guys slipping for no reason. It's not like it was, you know, there was a little bit of rain the night before.
That should have been an equipment issue, then.
It was warm.
If you're slipping and sliding and stumbling, change your cleats.
Yeah. It wasn't so bad in the second half, but it certainly was a problem throughout the day.
Well, I would agree that the offensive inefficiency was there. And I'm not going to lay the entire blame at Tom. I don't think it should.
I didn't.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
I mentioned all those other things.
You're pointing it out. I realize that. I think that it was clear that there was some confusion amongst the receivers from time to time. Certainly one nitpick to go with. I think that there was some confusion as to whether or not Stephen Ridley was even down on his fumble that was returned 74 yards for a score. I think there was just general confusion the opening week that really came as, I guess, a surprise to most everybody, because you didn't see any of this in the exhibition. So,
well, you saw it in Detroit.
Well, okay, you saw it a little in Detroit, but I mean, they turned the ball over in Detroit. That just masked over everything. So I guess where I'm leading toward here, though, did we not see any of this realistically coming? Because of why? Because they just don't undress enough during the preseason and don't get into the playbook and don't show you the formations and don't go with the personnel groupings as much in the preseason because they're trying to look at different things or they're trying not to give away, you know, house secrets? Or is it just because we're all ignorant and we just don't know?
Well, I think one of the things we said about the Detroit game was, okay, yeah, it was the most important preseason game because it's the third one, but you're not going to see them come out and turn the ball over that many times and on a regular basis. Well, the first game that it mattered, that's exactly what they did.
They turned the ball over several times.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully Detroit was an aberration, and hopefully week one was just, you know, was just not necessarily an aberration, but a lot of the teams around the league have sloppy games in week one. There's not always a lot of good football in the first 4 weeks of the season. Would you agree?
I would suggest that, yeah, that's probably accurate because teams are trying to find themselves. They're still trying to work into some personnel groupings. If you're particularly young, and the Patriots in 2 years' time have gone from one of the oldest to one of the youngest rosters in the NFL.
Right.
So, yeah, there's some unfamiliarity here that you're probably trying to iron out.
So there's some wiggle room in those first few weeks to allow for those kind of mistakes, because the speed of the game is different than in the preseason. The whole game plan aspect, which you don't really have in the preseason, it takes a little while. And as we talked about in the previous show, there's a reason mid-season form is called mid-season form, because you're not playing that way in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a little while to get comfortable again with what's always a new group. A lot of the same players, but there's always turnover. There are always new players.
Why then did the running game look so particularly devastating in the preseason opener? If you can think back to that. Why would that have
because
been?
Because Philly's defense isn't that great.
Okay.
Well, that's why.
Yeah, I suppose that could be the case. But, I mean, that was like devastating. It was kind of like you could have said that was mid-season form right there just because of the way they were blocking.
But, again, you really can't judge – you really can't take much out of those.
So we take too
much. Other than individual performance.
This is the collective we take too much out of the preseason, way more than we should. There really shouldn't be any judgment at all on the preseason, should there?
Only on an individual basis. Like, you can tell if a guy can catch the ball. You can tell if a guy can tackle.
And we're talking about basically younger players, too, aren't we?
Anybody, yeah. Anybody. I'm looking in the preseason.
If a veteran player, veteran receiver per se, you know, can catch the ball in the clutch, and then has a bad preseason, you don't necessarily mark that against him thinking that, well, he's done it in crunch time before.
Right.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
So we're basically talking about younger players.
Well, no, but you're also looking to see if that older guy still has it.
Well, if a guy is at a certain age, if he's a 32, 33, 34-year-old receiver out there, then, okay, I would say that that's legitimate.
Or like a defensive end who you can tell he doesn't have the burst off the line anymore, and he doesn't have the speed to run around the corner and chase down the quarterback. Those are the kind of things you look for.
Hello, Andre Carter. Welcome back.
Well, it is kind of what I had in mind when I was making that's what I look for more in preseason is the individual performance.
Yeah.
As opposed to the team,
right,
or the unit, because they're not really doing what they're going to do in the regular season.
Okay. Well, I get the whole point here is that I'm trying to lead up to is that preseason expectations are always, and if not always, very close to always overblown. There's just really not much you can take from a preseason / exhibition exhibit. Of games through 3-4 weeks, whatever. Forget even the week 3 dress rehearsal when you're playing mostly starters. I really just don't put anything into that, which is one of the reasons, and I'm going to get to the ultimate point here and now, one of the reasons why I was hedging on our preseason prediction of, you know, wins and losses a week ago when we debuted the show for this year, and you went 9-7 and I went 10-6, and we got hammered for it, you know, through a bunch of people who listen to PFW and a few that listen to this program as well. But it's because, you know, I guess we were, you know, being called negative Nancys, to borrow a phrase. And
call them like I see them. Sorry.
But this is exactly why we did what we did. We try to look at it somewhat analytically. Now, you can say that, you know, Andy does that, and Fred does that, and Paul does that as well in certain instances. But I think you can also say that, you know, there's some pom-pom waving that's going on as well. And I guess that's okay, because this is, after all, Patriots.com radio. Look, and Patriots Football Weekly. So, but one of the things that I've tried to do over 13 years, and I know that you've tried to do as well with your position as a writer, is to try to go down the middle as best as you possibly can. And that's one of the reasons that this is such a great organization to do this for, because they allow us to do this. They want us to create the dialogue between the team and the fans and make the connection there to keep people coming back, knowing that, all right, if you want a little rah-rah, you can get some rah-rah. But if you also want the straight facts, you want the straight shot here, you're also going to get that. And I think that's what we were trying to do last week, knowing, as we have, and I've covered, this is my 26th season to cover the NFL and the New England Patriots in particular. I've covered the NFL for better than 30 years. Counting my time covering the Dallas Cowboys and Houston Oilers, you know, when I was working in Texas. Mm-hmm. So I've seen the pro game for a long, long time. And yes, the game has changed. Players have changed. Rules have changed. A lot has changed. Athletes are bigger, stronger, faster. That's very true. But the basic principle about young teams is still the same.
Yeah.
And especially,
unavoidable.
Especially young teams in critical decision-making, playmaking positions like receiver, like the Patriots have this year. And I don't care if you have the second coming of Johnny U, or you've got Joe Montana, or yes, we've got one of the best in Tom Brady throwing footballs out here. It's gonna take time.
Yeah.
And that's all we saw on Sunday, was that it's gonna take time for these guys to do it on the same page against the speed of the game, against a motivated opponent that has had his ass beat 19 of the last 20 times now by one team within the division. And you know that sticks in their craw. I don't care it's a new coach and a new coaching staff. That sticks. That hurts. And there's not a person in Buffalo that's gonna let this current team forget about that before they come to play here, you know, at the end of the season. So these guys are professionals. That's prideful. And so I'm telling you right now, yeah, I said 34-20, but I said it based on, I really thought that the Patriots might score more. And this game, Eric, was a 27-7 game if you don't turn the ball over.
It's certainly a different score. And it's a lot more comfortable. It doesn't come down to Gostkowski at the end.
No.
Certainly not.
Not even close.
No. The game hinges on those turnovers. It really does. Because New England's defense really only gave up 14 of those 21 points.
That's correct.
So I really was encouraged by what I saw from the defense as a whole. Yes. I mean, they weren't great. They obviously weren't perfect. But they were better than I had hoped for.
Again. They don't do... I mean, it's not anywhere close if you don't turn the ball over. If you don't throw the pick,
they held up
and leave
the
two
bargain.
Fumbles, and if they go with, you know, without a turnover, this is an easy win. It's a relatively
easy win. It's a comfortable win. Right.
It's probably a 2-3 score win.
Yeah, double-digit win.
Yes.
Certainly.
Yes.
Certainly.
So this is why you can put, to me, you're not going to put any of the blame on the defense. I heard some knuckleheads yesterday, you know, on Patriots Monday say, oh, the defense is the same old defense. They stink. What the hell game are they looking at? I didn't think the defense stunk. Did I think that they were particularly outstanding? No. But you don't put the blame at the foot of the defense for this one on Sunday.
No. No way. No, the defense was the brightest spot of the day.
They came up with stops when they needed them.
They did.
Can you nitpick some individual things? Yes, and I'm sure we will.
Sure. I mean, the two scores.
Yeah.
I mean, Aqib Talib blew his assignment on the touchdown to Robert Woods.
Mm-hmm.
That was clear to see. And it would happen in the corner of the end zone where I sit in the Ralph Wilson press box.
Yeah.
So I saw it completely unfold right before my eyes.
Right.
And you can maybe get on McCourty a little bit for not going over and helping Arrington quickly enough on the other touchdown to Stevie Johnson. aside from that, I don't have really much to gripe about. I thought they, and again, I watched the film yesterday, went back, and did a focus on the defense because I had written so much about the offense in my immediate analysis post-game. And I thought they got to Manuel in his face a little bit more often than maybe they would have last year. They did some creative things, I thought, defensively, namely moving Chandler Jones in to tackle and putting a third defensive end out there.
I thought that was a great move, by the way, because they certainly got pressured up the middle.
Yeah, it worked. Yeah, I thought it was effective. Mm-hmm. They didn't sub whatsoever in the secondary all game. They kept those same five guys out. The only time they did sub was when they went from nickel to base, and they only did that for a couple of plays. Alfonso Dennard went to the bench, and Kyle Arrington stayed on the field, moved over to the edge.
Arrington had a good game.
He had a great game.
Forced two fumbles.
He had a great game. Joe Villano, rookie, played a lot more than I expected, swapping with Will Fork and Kelly. Those three guys were in a rotation and tackle the whole game. A couple of times they got pushed around a little bit, but by and large they held their own. They got some decent pressure. They did pretty well against the run. Their job was to stop C.J. Spiller, the defense. For the most part, they did that.
I actually thought Gerard Mayo was a little lost. I know he came up with about 15 tackles, for the
game.
He's
going to do that.
But I in coverage, I thought he was a little lost.
So, yeah, there are some nits to be picked.
Yep.
But overall, defense had a solid effort. And, again, if the offense was just more in sync, we're not talking about bringing Gostkowski in the last second.
No. All right, so that's kind of our at least setting of the table for nitpicks.
And they're lucky to get a win.
And they are lucky to get a win.
1-0.
That certainly could have been a loss, and certainly you could see that coming if it weren't for that last drive.
And the Jets win, and now
and
they're
the
coming
Jets
in
win,
here.
And they're coming in here, and then now you're
the Dolphins won.
I know, and now you're talking about being behind the eight ball very, very early in the season, in a season that we fully expect to kind of ride the roller coaster. And injuries now are starting to step into the equation as well.
Yeah.
And we're only 1 week into the season. Again, Eric, I'm not going to, I'm not going to pat us on the back for this one, but I believe we talked about this very subject a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason for our downplaying the enthusiasm for the season is because it's a young team. Young team usually means thin team. And if you have any injuries, oh boy, now you're talking trouble. And I don't want to say that we're there yet because we're not, because we really don't know for certain about Thursday's availabilities this week, but we're on our way to having some significant injuries.
Yes.
So, I mean, Shane Vereen we know is out. Broke his wrist on his first play from scrimmage.
And
I give,
performance,
give him a tremendous amount of credit for staying in the game.
And Danny Amendola. Both of them.
And Amendola, we saw him. We saw him, kind of grab at the groin, after one particular play on the sideline.
What he did in the second half
was tremendous.
Really, really was.
I hate to say this, but it was Welker-esque.
It was. I tweeted that out actually during the game.
It was Welker-esque.
He was doing a great impression.
And that's why people compare the two, not because they both went to Texas Tech and not because
that's part of it.
And not because Danny followed him here, which is probably another part of it. But at the same time,
they have similar type games.
He did, and they do. They do have similar type games.
Danny's a little bit bigger, a little bit faster.
A little bit faster, and he's very much as tough, and I think that's what people wanted to see. But here's the rub about Danny Amendola. Because he's got the apparent groin problem, he still is highly questionable to play on Thursday night based on the knowledge that we have today, and I'll let you get to that in a couple of moments. He has to learn how to play hurt as compared to being playing injured. I think there's a difference. Welker could do that, and we all know that. We don't know that yet about Amendola. Now, while we saw tremendous clutch performance on the game-winning drive in that fourth quarter, two huge third-down catches on that drive as well. 9 of his 10 grabs were for first downs on Sunday. That's phenomenal.
Even his first catch of the game, the one that was right about at midfield, was sort of a juggling act.
Yes.
With a guy draped over
him. Yeah, draped
back.
All over him.
Excellent
He's
catch.
He's got tremendous concentration
no question.
On the ball.
No question.
So we've seen that, and he's starting to make his own name, which is great. But the one thing that he can separate himself and begin to put himself in a class by himself and forget the comparisons to Welker is he's got to learn to play hurt as opposed to injured. Now, if he's injured, it's a different story. If he's injured and he's got to miss time, that's fine. But a groin, okay, we know that's a nagging thing, but I also know that, you have to usually sit a while for that to really heal. I don't know that the Patriots can afford that, especially at this early stage of development by the other receivers. I also know that sometimes a groin, if you re-hurt it in a quick move, a groin pull can become a groin tear. So this is what the Patriots are having to juggle. This is what Danny Amendola is having to juggle right now. And I just, I'm not terribly confident in the outcome here.
Yeah. I'm going to err on the side of caution and say don't expect to see Danny on Thursday.
I don't think we will either.
And I'm basing that off of a few factors, one of which is significant. They had one open practice this week. It was today. And there were two players of note who were not there, Vereen, Amendola. Guys like Aaron Dobson, who didn't play because of injury against Buffalo, was there.
Okay.
Guys like Rob Gronkowski, didn't play against Buffalo because of injury, was there.
I don't think Gronk comes back, though, either.
No, but it's significant that a guy who didn't play because of injury was at practice, and a guy who got hurt in the game was not at practice.
Okay.
So I'm putting two and two together and basing it on other things that I may have heard. I don't put much hope in Danny Amendola playing on Thursday against the Jets.
All right, we've kind
now, I have my bigger concern is after the Jets.
Yeah.
Will he be ready? We'll see.
Well, fortunately for the Patriots, after the Jets, you'll have
10 days. Yeah.
To rest before the next game against Tampa Bay, you know, also here at Gillette. So that will help somewhat. All right, we've set the table for you, sort of turning the momentum toward Thursday, but keeping in mind what transpired on Sunday with our nitpicks, the injuries, all of this that's kind of coming into the equation right now. Web radio at patriots.com, 855-PATS-500 is the telephone number, or 508-298-0398, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter. Come on, hit the Twitter feed, kids, and John.Rook on Facebook. And I find our friend Michael on Facebook who says, Thursday's game will be nail-biting division game with a New England win. He says 23-16 already. Too many third downs and field goals by both teams. Gostkowski will have to earn his money. New England has a better coach, better quarterback, and that will be the difference at the end of the game. But he says his easy nitpick, when will Ridley learn that holding on to the ball is a fundamental skill for a running back?
It's you know, I was really concerned after the first fumble, which was not ruled a fumble, and the Bills challenged and lost, you know, like it was the second, third play of the game, whatever it was. And I was worried that it was going to happen again in the game, and it did. And he lost that one, and it was significant. I do have my long-term concerns for Stephen Ridley. At first I thought it was, you know, just a matter of you know, poor luck, you know, a guy hitting the ball with his helmet right spot. But this is almost to the, you remember when Kevin Falk was a rookie,
yeah,
first couple of years,
right.
I used to hold my breath every time he went back for a punt or every time they threw the ball to him, because I expected him to fumble, and more often than not he did. But Kevin Falk did something to completely change that and became one of the most sure-handed guys this team has seen. Whatever he did, they need to have Stephen Ridley do, because it's a legitimate problem for him now. It's happening way too frequently for it to be just a coincidence. And I don't know what the solution is for that, but the coaching staff has to do something with him. And psychologically, I think they have to worry about that too.
On
whether or not when he comes back, whether he's going to be thinking about.
He's going to
always being asked about it, and
he's fortunate in the respect that he's going to get a chance to redeem himself fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Because Vereen, who had an unbelievable game at his career best, 101 yards, one of only two running backs in the entire NFL to go over the century mark on the opening week, which hasn't happened in a long time. That few, you know, and since Vereen is out with the broken wrist, Ridley's going to get a chance to right the wrong,
and
pretty
he might
quickly.
Not have.
He might not have. No, I think he would have set the bench. Don't you think Shane Vereen earned the opportunity to start with that kind of a performance?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really bad luck.
And I'm sure the Patriots probably feel similarly. But he's going to get a chance to redeem himself pretty quickly. On Twitter, David says, why is Eric so negative about Brady? Does he not realize that he's having to readapt that he's having to readapt with the receiving core.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. Thanks. Yeah, I've been covering this team for a long time, fella. And I watch the games in person, all of them, and I have the luxury of seeing this guy all the time. I know what I'm seeing.
We're snippy now.
Oh, I mean, because these people think it's just Brady's a god and he's perfect all the time. He's not. He's a human being. He makes mistakes. He makes a lot of them in the playoffs lately, too.
I'm a human being.
We tell it like it is. We are not fanboys. Sorry if you don't like it, but that's the truth. Get over it.
Well, that's what we got hammered for last week, for largely not being fanboys, because how could you be so negative for saying the team is going to go 9-7 or 10-6? How could you have the unmitigated gall to choose the Patriots to lose?
Right.
Isn't this Patriots radio?
I call it like it is. Go back to the shows in 2007 when they acquired Moss and Welker and that whole fleet of studs, and I said then they were going to go undefeated if they could beat the Colts. I said that in preseason.
Right.
And when they beat the Colts, I said they're not losing another game.
And that usually...
I called it like I saw it. Yeah. They were the team to beat back then, and they weren't going to lose to anybody.
Right. But this team is not the team
to beat
right
now. This is not even close to being
Not even close. It's got a chance to develop,
and
but
he's
not
the quarterback he was back then either.
Oh, there's no question about that.
Yes, the young receivers are certainly a factor. But it's not a factor when he's throwing balls at their feet. That's not their fault.
Right. All right, Eldridge in North Carolina, you're going to lead it off here in the playbook. Hey, Eldridge. Where is he?
Eldridge.
It's not answering. The button's not answering, Kevin. I'm trying to talk to Eldridge, and it's not answering. It
just worked.
Hey, can you hear me?
There you are. Now you are.
Okay, how you doing?
What's up, baby?
Nick, pick time as usual.
Okay, go.
Hit us.
But, Eric, get off Brady, okay?
Oh, stop it. Oh, stop it, you.
Can't run down there and catch it off.
This is not the real Eldridge. This is not the real Eldridge.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is, because you cut me off last show, so I'm the same guy.
I didn't cut you off.
No, I probably did.
Yeah, you did. You cut me off because I got on the secondary, and y'all were like, oh, no, no. No, but...
No, we only did that, Eldridge, because we were up against the time, so don't worry about that.
Okay. Well, I ain't going to hold that against you then. But no, Tom can't run and catch it too, man. You know what I mean? And some of those throws.
Yeah, he needs to throw it. Yeah. He needs to throw it better, too. He had 23 incompletions.
I mean, he do throw it better, but the receivers got to come back to the ball, too. I mean, you learned that in junior high school and high school also.
Listen, you people. Wait, hold on. Eldridge, hold on. All you people who are saying this, I'm not saying it's Brady's fault entirely. He has to shoulder some of the blame. He's the one throwing the damn football. Just like everyone getting on Welker for dropping, quote-unquote, that pass in the Super Bowl. It was a terrible throw by Brady. He was equally at fault. Not all of these throws that he makes are perfect. People accept that.
I didn't say all was perfect. But you can't. I give some of the blame, but not majority of the blame, like y'all do sometimes. Not majority of the blame. Because, like I said...
When did I give him the majority of the blame?
We're not giving the majority of the blame to Brady.
I said half. Half. 50-50.
So you rush.
50-50.
Half two.
Half.
I give him 40-60.
Oh, for God's sake.
Because Ryan got a block also, just like the man said earlier.
Hey, Eldridge, he should have run the ball in when he had the ball in the red zone, don't you think?
Yeah, I think he should have ran it in.
Yeah, he should have run it. And I think Tom would admit that.
Yeah,
Tom admitted that, too. He made a mistake.
Yeah, I think he should have ran it. And then, but then again, you got to fault Elderman and Thompson for dropping the touchdown pass in the end zone.
Yeah, that's
that
true.
Pass he threw that flag in the corner.
That's true.
Edelman should have caught that.
Edelman should have had it too.
That's right. If Edelman had caught that, hold on, time out. If Edelman had caught that pass, he would have been out of bounds.
No, he wouldn't.
Yes, he would. No. Eldridge.
He was drunk. His foot was there.
Eldridge, stop talking and listen. I was there. It happened in my end zone. I saw it right in front of me. He would have been out of bounds. You were not there. I was.
No, I saw it on
it doesn't matter what you saw on TV. He was out of bounds. He would have caught that. It would not have counted. He might have had 1 foot in. That's it. It was too high a pass. Trust me.
Okay. If you was in the end zone, okay, I'll go with that. But I'm saying what I saw on the screen. If he had caught it, drugged his foot, he'd had that one. Maybe if he'd been 6 inches taller.
Well, that's also true.
That would have helped.
That'd help everybody.
But I know, like I said earlier, I understand rookies going to be rookies, and, you know, they're going to have their mistakes, you know, first game, maybe the first three games. I understand that. But see, they also got to understand they got to get on page quickly because ain't nobody there but them. And I thought the personnel manager, BB, mm-hmm. for not getting the right people. You got a Hall of Fame quarterback there. I know you could just try this guy, that guy. But, man, everybody from Rutgers ain't champions.
Yeah, seriously.
You know what I mean?
You got that
everybody
right.
Everybody from Rutgers ain't champion.
I know.
Because I don't remember Rutgers winning any BC bowls, period.
No.
I don't remember that.
They haven't been. They never got to a big-time bowl. They never won a Big East title.
That's what I'm saying. But I see LSU, Alabama, and I see Reed, who got drafted after Harmon got drafted. I'm seeing Reed making plays in the secondary of San Francisco, tackling, hitting, picking up interceptions, fumbling. Well, Harmon on the bench. You know what I mean? And I just see other corners that was in the draft that we could have got making plays, and our guys are just getting burnt like turnt toast. You know, and I just don't understand that. You know, I understand he don't trust his scouts, but he got to trust somebody besides Steph because he got an F for himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
In
so,
my book,
Eldridge, what's your major nitpick for the game? What's
major
the big
nitpick.
Takeaway?
Mention they pick from the game is, like I said, rookies, I give you a pass. All-pro corners and safeties, and you get burnt like that, I can't give you a pass, man. You've been in the league long enough. You know what I mean? You should know how to cover and how to play and how to hit. You know, I understand the second half, fourth quarter, defense saved us, but you should have been doing that the whole four quarters.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I look at, because right now, you're the strength. You're not the weakness now. You got to be the strength. Right now, the offense is the weakness. You know,
okay.
We don't have Gronk, Hernandez, and do lifetime or whatever, and we sure don't have no outside receivers yet. We got them, but they ain't developed yet.
Yep,
they ain't coming yet.
Okay,
you know that's my biggest nitpick. Corners, all pro, linebackers, whatever. You got to step up. It's just bottom line. You got to step up.
Okay,
you got to bring your A game every play.
Okay,
not some plays.
I won't disagree with that. I thought that even while Arrington had one of his better games, that Tlaib was subpar. Safeties were largely, meh.
Inconsistent as usual.
Yeah.
Inconsistent as usual.
Yeah, neither here nor there. You know, Dennard had one good play early and then nothing really the rest of the game. So, and got burnt once. So, you know, yeah, a mixed bag, I would say, at best.
At best. And then the line, offensive line, you know, everybody should have read that when that Detroit game.
Yeah.
Because Detroit always mm-hmm. come after us, no matter if it's preseason or whatever.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So everybody that's aggressive, they can get through.
Okay.
You know, they're in a passive line. And
Marcel Darius. But Marcel Darius is pretty good.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
So, you know, that
Mario
was,
Williams.
Like I said earlier, previews are coming attraction.
Mm-hmm.
The line got to do a whole lot better. Receivers got to do a lot better. But I give most of the blame to the defense for the first three quarters.
All right.
So they played better the fourth quarter.
All right.
And thank y'all. Y'all have a good day.
Thanks, right, Eldridge. Appreciate that. Always appreciate the call. Back to the phones. David in Maryland up next in the playbook. Hi, David.
Hi. I have a question.
You go.
Yeah. Last week I asked this question that if the Patriots, are we going to have opportunity to go to the Super Bowl this year? And the other people from the Progress, right, said yes.
Okay, what's your question? So what's the question?
So do you think we're going to make it this year to the Super Bowl?
I think it's incredibly early to say that. I don't know how you could even ask that question after 1 week, David.
Yeah, I know. I'm just curious.
Well, I mean, you know, they have talent. They were within one game last year and didn't do it. And you could make the argument that they're not as strong a team right now as they were last year. So if they didn't make it last year, haven't you kind of answered your own question?
Yes. I have another question. Like, maybe, which running back should the Patriots use? Ridley or Vaughn?
There's nobody named Vaughn, but if you're talking about Shane Vereen, he's hurt and he's going to be out for a while.
Yep, Vereen.
He's hurt and he's going to be out for a while.
He'll be out for at least a couple of weeks, maybe a little bit more because of the broken wrist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Appreciate that, David.
Hey,
let's
John,
go to...
this is a good reminder for people. Don't do drugs.
Just say no.
Mm.
Wow. Eric Scalavino.
Seriously.
Eric Scalavino with his public service announcement for the day.
I don't know what made me think of that, but I just thought it would be beneficial for our listeners.
Chris in New Brunswick, Canada. La Canada. Hey, Chris.
How you doing, John?
Good.
Good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Appreciate you taking the time.
I have no problem. Just traveling to work.
Good.
My nitpick for Sunday.
Yep.
We're in week two, and we already have injuries. Amendola. I wasn't a big fan of Amendola's signing. I saw him at the first half, pulled a groin. Now it's questionable for Thursday. So that would be my nitpick. Our rookie wide receivers, it's going to take time for them to develop into anything, to have their potential. And I don't see who, and I don't know who Brady's going to pick as his number one go-to man. Obviously, with the tight end being depleted as they are, Sudfeld only had one throw. He's not going to have the reliability for such guys as Welker. Gronk is who's out. Hernandez, who's locked up. That's my nitpick.
Okay.
Also, you guys were raked over the coals for being pessimistic about your overall predictions on how the Patriots season's going to go last week. But we barely won against Buffalo. It was 23-21. The likes of Houston, Denver, Baltimore, New Orleans, I can see them going 9-6, 10-5, if that. I think we're going to win the conference, from the division, actually, not the conference, but I think we're going to win the division. But I can't see going anywhere in the playoffs this year.
Well, but to make a judgment on, you know, the entire season based on 1 week is really, I don't think that's terribly wise, Chris. I mean, I can understand why fans, you know, would be a little upset because the team didn't perform to what they perceived that New England had. And I think it's part of the reason why Eric and I were trying to breathe some common sense into the equation a week ago. What we saw, you know, we're not, you know, as fans, we're not exactly happy with either, but we're not doing this as fans. We're trying to do this as reporters, as observers, as journalists. We'll try to look at a story right down the middle based on our observations. This is what we think, and that's the job that we have. Sometimes it's a great job, other times it's not so great, but that's the job we have. So for people to expect us to do nothing but wave pom-poms, that's not our job. That's not what we do.
No.
That's, if you, as a fan, if you want to wave the pom-pom, that's great. We want you to support the team. We're glad you support the team because if you didn't, you wouldn't be here listening to us right now. But you want the straight poop, at least I would think that you would want that.
If you ask a question, if
you're going to get an honest answer. And that's
so. If you don't want an honest answer, don't ask.
Then don't ask the question. It's very simple. And I think, you know, to kind of make the leap that this season is not going to turn out because of 1 week. Well, that's also kind of, you know, throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Do you know what the toughest week in the NFL schedule is to pick games?
Week one.
No.
Week two. All right. I knew it had to be 1 or 2
because so much changes from week one to week two.
You can't get a trend
on
a team
until
you get at least 6, 7, 8, 9.
At the very least 4. At very least 4 games in. The toughest week of all is to pick second week games because usually week one, a team that you didn't expect to play well does and wins, and then you fall into that trap and say, oh, well, they're playing well. We've got to pick them this week.
Yeah.
Or a team that laid an egg.
Right.
I mean, look at New England in, what was it, 03? When they or yeah. 3 or 04 when they lost 31-0 to Buffalo?
Yeah, 03.
In week one?
Yes.
Next week they went to Philadelphia and spanked the Eagles.
Right.
It's the toughest week in football to predict. It's week two. So, because week one doesn't really give you the accurate gauge on where a team is.
Correct.
So, you know, as right as we were about how the outcome of this game was, it's not a reason to panic yet or to make a judgment for the entire season.
Right.
I'm still holding to my prediction that, you know, against the tough teams like Denver and Baltimore, although Baltimore lost in the hands of Denver pretty good, managed it well. I still kind of look at our season as going probably 10-6. You know,
that's what we said last week, brother. You're right there with us. We said that last week. We said this team would struggle against the better teams on the schedule and probably win the games that they're supposed to win, which to me led to 10-6.
That's right. And, you know, and as I said, you know, you look at Buffalo, you got to give your time for the receivers to develop. it's the first giant. Sure,
absolutely. And hey, that's right. And Chris, I will allow that this team could improve if this team, if we see the upward learning curve, you know, begin for this receiving core, and they actually come in and start contributing and looking like they're all on the same page, and there's no miscommunication, which we saw a ton of out there, and that's one of the big nitpicks that I had was just yeah. didn't seem to be any communication offensively at all, especially amongst the receivers on Sunday was my major nitpick for the week. If they're able to develop that and learn that, I said this was a team that looked like on paper a 12 or 13 win team. And could they aspire to that? Could they improve to that? Yes. Yes, they can. But my whole point was is that they probably won't if injuries come into play. And we all know that injuries do come into play. And after 1 week, they already are coming into play.
I mean, Shane Vereen, who had an awesome game, because Ridley can't hold on to the ball. He's out for a couple of weeks with a broken bone in his wrist. And then we look at Amendola, who's questionable for Thursday.
Correct.
And that's where I'm just going back to when they let Welker walk for Amendola. And I'm still kicking myself, saying, you know, yeah, and Bill, we trust. But I don't understand what he did. I don't understand why he let Welker walk and bring in Amendola, who's injury. I mean, he's known to be.
As Coach Belichick is wont to say, and thanks for the call, Chris, as he's wont to say, it is what it is. You know, they decided that was the direction they were going to go for whatever reason. The answer that we always get is a pat answer, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. We try to do what's best for the football team without being told, well, what is best for the football team?
It's the why.
We don't know. It's the why.
We know that part. We need to know the why.
We know the what. We don't know the why.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, and the team, the organization, doesn't choose to tell us why. We ask it because that's our job to ask it, but we never get a direct answer. It's rare that ever happens around here. Patrick in Brooklyn. Patrick, you're up next in the playbook.
How you doing?
Good, Patrick.
Good. Couple of things, couple of observations. Big fan of your show.
Thank you.
And big fan of the team. Record, I'm leaning towards 10-6, maybe 11-5.
Okay.
Pass rush.
Patrick, hold it. Let me ask you something, though. Before last Sunday, did you think better than 10 wins?
I was thinking probably in the 11 range. Maybe I came down one game after the loss. But the fact of the matter is the receiving core, that's what is pulling me more to 10-6 because they've got the talent. It's just going to be a work in progress.
Yep.
These guys are not in sync with the quarterback. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to switch the offense to maybe a more run-dominated team until these guys come around. And then what we don't have now, we don't have the security blanket. We no longer own the middle of the field because we don't have Gronkowski and Hernandez. So that changes everything. Before, we owned the middle of the field, and you could pretty much guarantee that we would be able to dictate and do certain things. That's changed.
Is it fair to say, both to you, Patrick, and to Mr. Scalavino here, is it fair to say that the job of these young receivers might get a tad easier when Gronkowski comes back?
Totally. I think Gronkowski, if he's even
assuming he's wrong,
85% of what he was,
right,
it'll change things. But you could see with that receiver that was really good in preseason, the guy Tompkins, you could see that he struggled in what appeared to be basic situations. Just getting his feet down in the end zone, knowing how to deal with a back shoulder. I mean, there were really a lot of basic things that he should have been able to handle, and it was just too much for him in his first game.
Right.
Now, he'll be able to do these things. It's just that in his first game, it was just too much at him at one time.
Okay.
Also, let me give you my other points. Vince Wilfork.
Yep.
Love the guy. However, I'm going to tell you right now, this is the decline of Vince Wilfork. What I'm beginning to see is, A, he appears to be out of shape, and B, he's got to come out on pass rushing situations right now. He's just not going to be a factor in the pass rushing game. Mm-hmm. I still don't see where New England's pass rush has gotten much better based on what I'm seeing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, by the end of the year, we're going to see why Bill Belichick is so respected. He'll have figured out everything, and he'll have a team that going into the playoffs, nobody's probably going to want to face. On that note, thanks a lot for letting me on the show. You're doing a great job, and keep up the good work. I'll listen.
Thanks for listening, Patrick. Appreciate
Patrick,
that. What do you think?
He's got a good point on Wilfork because I actually thought Tommy Kelly did a better job getting to the quarterback than Wilfork did. Now, Wilfork's still a presence in the, you know, run-stuffing part aspect of things, but I think he's right when he talks about getting Wilfork off the field on pass rush, obvious pass rush downs.
And the way that Buffalo was playing with their up-tempo offense, they were going probably too fast for their own good, which is one of the things I thought that Buffalo did wrong, you know, in trying to mount a comeback, if you will. They didn't allow, you know, Wilfork the opportunity really to get off the field as
yeah.
much.
And he did. I mean, they subbed for Wilfork plenty of times, more so than I expected, actually. Joe Villano, the rookie, got a lot of reps.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was a good point by Patrick about Wilfork.
All right. Bristol, Connecticut. Jeff, hello.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey, Jeff.
It's kind of a belabored point now from when I called in earlier, but I'm going to say it anyways. And, you know, it's like I'm talking to all my friends and family and whatever about this, you know, first week of the game and the season. And it really just blows my mind how, like, up in arms everybody is about this win. Like, I feel like we lost by 50 points or something. And it's almost like it's the curse of this 2007 season. I feel like ever since that season we got undefeated, it's like, everybody expects like this flashy win, right? Like it's like if it's not some blowout win, then we're not the Pats, we're not who, you know, what they expect, or we're not the same. And it's like everybody just needs to relax, and remember like kind of where we came from and where this, you know, dynasty or whatever you want to call it that they are now ish, you know, that whole foundation started. It started off by out-coaching teams, getting lucky a lot, and pulling out marginal wins. Like, that's what we were all about, right? You know, field goal games. So Brady and Belichick did all the time, you know what I mean? Like, winning a game in the NFL is not easy. And, you know, they say it constantly to the press, and that's just the reality of the situation. It doesn't matter if you're playing the Jets, it doesn't matter if you're playing Buffalo. Like, it's like every Pats fan these days is like, they look at our schedule and like, oh, Buffalo sucks, the Jets suck, everybody sucks, they should all be guaranteed wins, and that's just not the case. So I just want everybody who's listening to just relax, and if we win, be happy, because I don't know how long it's going to last. Like, everyone's kind of pointing out Brady's on the decline, you know, Vince Wilfork's on the decline. Like, a lot of these guys we've relied on and we've enjoyed for so long aren't going to be around, and so I'm happy with the win. I'm going to be happy with any win we get this season, and that's how I'm going to continue to think, because when Brady came on board and started winning, that's how it happened, and I was happy when we were winning by 3 points, and I always will be. So that's all I'm going to say. You guys have a good day.
Well, Jeff, hold on. First of all, thank you for injecting a little bit of sanity into the equation. Second of all, I'm not going to let you go until you nitpick something.
Okay. My nitpick, which you can't really fault anybody for, though, is just injuries. It's killing me. You know, it's going to be clearly our biggest challenge this year. Ridley, you know, I don't know what's going on with him. Hopefully he just steps up. But yeah, the fact that there's like this kind of mystery now circulating around Amendola, Gronk, you know, a big question mark there. And now Vereen, who at least week one anyways was kind of emerging as would appear to be, you know, potentially a go-to running back, you know, now he's injured. So that's really not looking good. So I'm going to nitpick that. And I want everyone to relax on Kembrell Tompkins a little bit. This is a kid's first game in the NFL, and he, like, bounced around in community colleges. So, you know, I'm not totally lost on him yet. Tom Brady saw something in him, from what I hear in the off season and in the preseason. He was clearly frustrated with him that week, but I'm not totally done and giving up on him. Yeah, I'm going to nitpick the injuries. These guys got to get in the gym or whatever they got to do and keep themselves healthy, or else, you know, we just aren't going to stand a chance.
All right, Jeff, good stuff. Again, thanks for injecting a little bit of sanity into the equation there. All right, Big E, you're done for the hour here?
Yeah, I got to go back upstairs.
All right.
Sorry.
I'll see you a little later. Got a big soccer match here tonight.
They do. You
Brazil,
involved?
Portugal.
Are you involved?
I got to do the PA on that.
I didn't know you spoke Portuguese.
I know.
Yeah.
I didn't know either. I know. But they said, hey, you got to show up. I'm like, why don't they just turn it over to the Portuguese translator?
Just before E leaves, can you give us one of those big goals? Can you give us one?
Goal! How's that?
Not bad. Was your face is all red. It's the same color as your shirt now. Is that a Texas shirt?
That's a burnt orange shirt.
Where's the Texas logo?
No logo. My girlfriend doesn't like the logos. She says I need to, you know, colors are fine. Yeah. Logos stink. So I'm like,
There's also one more.
Where'd you find
one more item?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages,
John always
it's time
mouths
to
the words.
Pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
And today's word, John, I don't think it really has anything to do with what we've discussed. I often try to do that. I try to relate it to the discussion. But I'm going to go with concomitant.
We used that one last year.
No, we didn't.
Yes, we did.
No, we didn't.
I swear we did.
We didn't.
We used concomitant.
We didn't.
Roll back the tape.
We didn't because I just learned that word a few weeks ago. So we could not have used it last year.
Double-edged sword on that one. Okay, go ahead.
Concomitant. It means naturally associated with or accompanying something.
Okay, so football is concomitant with injuries.
Yes, well done.
Thank you very
much. Well done, you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Or you could say it the other way around.
Or injuries are concomitant with football.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. So I guess we can relate it to what we've been talking about.
That's exactly what we've been talking about.
Okay. Well done.
And good job. And I will be concomitant with a commercial break here very shortly. Whatever. That wasn't quite as good as the other one.
The first one was better. You should have squirted where you were.
Well, you'll be back here tomorrow, though.
Yeah,
right?
I'll be here tomorrow.
All right, very good. All right, got to get in a break. If you're on the phone, stay right where you are. You will be up next, and then we've got emails to get to, webradio@patriots.com. We've got Twitter feeds to get to. Oh, by the way, I got to read this one real quick, E, before you leave the door. David wanted you to know, please tell Eric not to get easily offended for people's points of view. We know Brady is not perfect, but receivers need to step up too. That's what he just wanted you to know.
Yeah, that's fine. We just get far too much heat for not being homers when that's not what we're supposed to be.
Not supposed to be.
And that irks me to no end.
All right, so send your tweets at JR Broadcaster. Send your Facebook messages. John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the address there. And then, of course, 855-PATS-500 on the phones. Let's go.
You know that celebration dance? The I just got a heck of a deal on awesome entertainment, so let's dance, dance? You probably haven't done it in a while, so here's a reason to. Now until September 3rd, when you sign up for 100% fiber optic Verizon Fios, you can take your entertainment to the next level with America's fastest, most reliable internet. Switch to a Fios Triple Play online for just $79.99 a month for 12 months and get your choice of a $300 Amazon.com gift card or a $300 Visa prepaid card with a 2-year agreement. Plus, get a high-speed wireless router at no additional charge. You won't get that with cable. And that's an entertainment deal worth dancing about. So hurry. This great summer deal ends September 3rd. Visit gottogetfios.com and upgrade today. Technology that makes life more entertaining. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by MetaBank, member FDIC. Amazon.com is not a sponsor of this promotion. Restrictions apply. Fios available in select areas. Offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a 2-year agreement and ends 9/3/13. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply. Visit Verizon.com/Amazon for details.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only 4-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochere. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards Credit Card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards Credit Card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
With power comes responsibility, and NRG has taken that responsibility to new heights by evolving the way sustainable energy is discussed and used in the 21st century. With 3,000 state-of-the-art solar panels installed at Patriot Place, we've transformed the open-air retail complex next to Gillette Stadium into a visually stunning, self-sustaining destination that generates 60% of its own power. NRG is proud to be the official energy provider for Patriot Place, Gillette Stadium, and the New England Revolution.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
The word off-season doesn't exist in the NFL. Maybe for hot dog vendors and groundskeepers, but not for teams or players or fans. When the goal every year is winning it all, the road begins to be paved in February. Because there are holes that need to be filled, weights that need to be lifted, and next levels that need to be reached. Keep up with your favorite team with coverage of NFL Network 24/7 on NFL Mobile. Always having your passions with you? That's powerful. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile from Verizon. Airtime and messaging rates may apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Available on select smartphones. Don't call or text while driving.
Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
And hour number two in the playbook. You can also get us toll-free at 855-PATS-500. Email webradio at patriots.com. Social media at JR Broadcaster on Twitter. John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, on Facebook. The phone lines are full. Let me get to this one email before I get back to the phones, because Jay,
you're
sent
in demand
this one,
there, Jay.
I know. Jay near Rochester sent this one in yesterday, and he wanted to make sure that Eric and myself and even you, Kevin, says here, he wanted to see this, even though Eric just left. He says, when we used to, we survived week one. I tried to spit that out a little quickly there. I hope that it turns out the Bills are better than we thought they are, and not that the Pats are much worse than we thought. You guys did say last week that you thought that the team may not be where a lot of us seem to think they were. You understanding now why I need to get to this email? There you go. Before I get to the nitpicks, I just want to mention, I was glad to see Kyle Arrington have a good game. Maybe he's back to his year one form after a down sophomore year. Also, I know Amendola had a great game, showed heart, but when he went out with a groin injury, how many Patriot fans said to themselves, wow, that didn't take long? Yeah, I think that I got a tweet like within 10 seconds of that shot of him grabbing the groin on the sideline saying, okay, who had 28 minutes in the Amendola pool? which I actually thought was pretty good. That was my big concern when he was signed, and hopefully it won't be a year-long trend. As for picking nits, I figure everyone will be frothing at the mouth over disappearance of rookie receivers and tight ends, so I'm going to go a different route. Where was the pass rush? I don't remember seeing anyone putting pressure on Manuel. I thought that having Tommy Kelly inside the big Vince would allow Ninkovich and Jones to wreak havoc, but it never seemed to happen. And as we mentioned in the opening hour of the program, Jay, it really happened when we actually moved Jones to the inside and we got push up the middle, forcing him out of the pocket. That's really when we seemed to put the best pressure on E.J. Manuel on Sunday. He says, by the way, I'm still trying to figure out what happened on those Ridley fumbles. On the first one, I still can't figure out why Marone challenged it since the Pats recovered it. Second was just bizarre. When it happened, the way he suddenly flew backwards from the waist up made me think he'd been hit by the ghost of Marv Levy. Oh, wait, Levy's still alive. Well, let's hope that we'll see a better performance Thursday night against the stinking Jets. I really hope that Tompkins and the other rookies can get more involved in the passing game. If not, who knows how long Amendola and Edelman will hold up physically. Well, we don't think Amendola's going to hold up at all, unfortunately, because it certainly looks, it appears at least he won't go Thursday, although an official decision has not yet been made on that judgment. Don't be surprised if he's out Thursday, and frankly, don't be surprised if he's also out the following week, you know, 9 days later, 10 days later against Tampa Bay. I think they'll err on the side of caution early in the season on Amendola, so I wouldn't be surprised if he missed the next two. And I think he'll be without Vereen for at least the next two. Boy, does that put the onus now on the youngsters, huh? All right, to the phones, Paul in Worcester. Thanks for hanging on, Paul. You're in the playbook.
Hello.
Hi, Paul.
First time caller.
I'm glad you did. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you. Well, the reason why I'm calling because of the last caller, Jeff, and I think he kind of nailed it. A little bit older, I'm 44, so I remember the days before Drew Bledsoe. And then there, you know, we just got to the playoffs. We were excited.
Mm-hmm.
And that since Kraft and Belichick, they got to be one of the top teams in the NFL, at least top three. And so when people say that they're, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, I think they're right. I think they have their history on them.
Yeah, I think your points are well taken. And I'm glad that, you know, you're old enough to remember the dark days, you know, prior to, you know, Bill Parcells' arrival, really. And, you know, even though there were still, you know, every once in a while there was an odd good season in there, it's pretty tough to forget, you know, 1985 and pretty tough to forget, you know, 1976 and so, or excuse me, 78. So it's good that we do have some perspective. And I think that largely, Paul, and you probably agree with me on this one, but feel free to disagree, that the majority of Patriot fans, not everybody, but I'd say the majority of Patriot fans probably have become fans since this whole New England dynasty really got going back in 2001.
I'm sorry, they became what?
Said that the majority of fans probably climbed on board when this team did what they did in 2001.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think somewhere along the line, I think the last call with Jeff is right. I think after 2007, as the expectations are so high, that it's starting to become more, some reason it's starting to become more negative.
Yeah.
Belichick is arrogant. Well, Kraft is not spending his money.
Well, you know, I think people are just kind of searching for things. I mean, the problem is with success is that your expectations now arrive at a different level. And so when you have the success that you've had, naturally you're going to be used to having it, and so you're naturally going to believe that it's going to continue. And I think everybody has to realize that all things are cyclical in life and sports and not necessarily in that order. And this franchise, to have done what it has done now for going on 14 years, and to maintain its competitive level for that long is truly the rarity in sports. It's not common. It's not the norm. It's abnormal. You don't see this happen. And so the fact that the Patriots are part of it, they've set new standards for normal now for everybody, because for New England, this is normal. And so when you have a step back, like, you know, expectations like that, well, then naturally people are going to get upset. And believe me, I get get that. I understand that. But it's always good to have yourself and people like Jeff, as you said, Paul, inject just a little bit of realism and a little bit of, I remember when it was like it was, and to understand where we've come from and try to appreciate the bigger picture.
Because it is crazy, because we have, like, the second youngest NFL team, players on an NFL team.
Well, actually... Actually, overall roster age this year, it's 11th, but we've moved from the second oldest to the 11th youngest in 2 years.
Okay.
In 2 years. So that's extraordinary changeover in 2 years' time.
That's right. That's right. And I still think they're going to have a good year. I think their defense is going to improve. Their offense was over 500 points last year.
Just a moment.
So I think by the end of the year, midway of the year, I think the offense is going to be completely different than we're going to see.
Well, and I think that Paul, that will also coincide with Rob Gronkowski's return. We hope.
Absolutely.
And if he's anywhere close to where he was, prior to the arm issue from a year ago, then I think that you'll find it's going to open up some things for the younger receivers.
That's right. I believe that.
All right, Paul.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for taking the time. Sure appreciate that. Next up, in terms of the weight, David in Los Angeles. Hello, David.
How you doing?
Good.
This is just calling. There's a couple of nitpicks that I wanted to talk about.
Go.
All right, well, while watching the game this weekend, I saw that Hopkins wasn't getting rid of the ball right away or wasn't cutting properly, I guess. So... when he would basically miss a pass, he would throw his hands up and like in an attitude form. I don't think like as a rookie that would really fit good with Tom Brady's plan. You know what I mean?
So you're thinking that maybe he was frustrated over the ball
incompletions? Yeah.
Okay. Well, again, you got to understand it's a two-way street. Tom is throwing to a spot in the Patriots' offensive scheme. And so if the receiver is not in the spot, the receiver is the one that's going to err. Now, you can blame Brady for passes that are overthrown. You can blame Brady conceivably for passes that are underthrown and skip the turf. But for passes that are off the mark, I'm going to wager here and say that probably 8 times, maybe even 9 times out of 10, it's going to be because the receiver didn't run where he was supposed to run. And I think we saw that happen more than just once or twice with Kimbrell Tompkins on Sunday. He's just got to learn. He is a rookie, and the game is sped up tremendously for rookies. It's not even, and Eric brought this up in the opening hour of the program today, there's not even any comparison to the speed of the game now that there was even with the preseason this year, because guys are out there playing for paychecks now. And these 53-man rosters, of which only 45 are eligible on any given Sunday, and on the active roster, these guys are out there busting tail. It's not like they're kind of going through the motions in some instances like we see in the preseason. So the speed of the game is different. And it is, unless you've actually stood down on the sideline and you've seen these guys and you've heard it and you've watched it up close for yourself, you just can't get a grasp on how violent and how fast this game is. And I think it comes as a shock even to good college players like Kimbrell Tompkins was at Cincinnati. So he's got to get used to that. This was a good initiation. I think he can take heed, and I think all Patriots fans can take heed in the fact that Brady targeted him 14 times. Now, he may have only caught 4 balls, but Tom has confidence in Tompkins. Otherwise, he wouldn't have thrown his way that many times. I can guarantee you that.
No, yeah, definitely, and that's by the reason. That's the reason why I've been tweeting, saying, the blame isn't solely on Tom Brady, and why is Eric so hard on him? That the receiving corps has to develop and grow with what Tom Brady's plan is to give him the ball.
True, and to Eric's credit, again, as we said, it's not entirely Tom's fault here, but you can certainly give half of it to Tom, because there were some skips and there were some overthrows. So it's about communication, and the communication will continue to improve. But the problem right now is that while you're trying to take a step towards getting where you need to be, you may not have some of the guys out there that you need to have out there because of the injury problem. So the problem is beginning now at a very early stage of the season to compound itself. That's what the Patriots really need to be aware of. And some guys are going to have to absolutely step up huge. And you can probably start with Julian Edelman. You know, he's the guy definitely. That's going to be out there that probably will get the start, maybe even in the slot, because I don't expect really that that Amendola is going to be able to go on Thursday. And so Edelman's going to be the guy. And with, you know, the lack of production from the tight end spot, one catch from the tight end spot. So, I mean, wow. And no Shane Vereen either coming out of the backfield. And he's your best pass catcher coming out of the backfield. Who the hell is Tom going to throw to on Thursday? That should be the question and concern the Patriots fans have right now.
No, definitely. It's going to be a tough week, but we'll be pulling for him.
All right. And David, you mentioned you're tweeting. Are you following me on Twitter?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Just want to make sure that I'm getting your tweets, too. So, I'll, you know, send me a note so I can follow you back. All right?
All right, sounds good. Thank you very much. Zach, this is the first time calling, too. Well, you guys are doing a good job.
I'm glad you did, David. Don't be a stranger.
All right, you guys have it going.
Thanks, buddy. All right, Matt in Buffalo. Thanks for hanging on, Matt. You're in the playbook.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Matt.
I heard a few calls that people were just complaining about, like, the defense, but obviously I thought the defense was, like, the strong suit of yesterday's.
Yeah, I mean, overall, sure.
And I know people were complaining about there wasn't pressure on Manuel, but he didn't have a lot of rushing yards. So, I mean, and he only passed for 150, so I guess they contained him pretty good.
You know, when you look at the overall stats, I mean, the Patriots had 420, 430-some yards of offense. They held Buffalo to 280. I think anytime you can hold a team in the NFL in this day of spread offenses and no huddle offenses, if you're holding a team to less than 300 yards of total offense, I think you've done a hell of a job.
Yeah, I mean, people were blaming Brady. I mean, that interception obviously wasn't his fault. He didn't play fantastic by any means, but managed the game good enough.
Yeah, you know, the game was managed as it was. And again, as we mentioned in the opening hour of the program today, Matt, this was a double-digit win if you don't make mistakes. So you can really blame the offense for the lack of production on the scoreboard and for giving Buffalo the opportunity to make the game close. It was the offensive problem. Ridley fumbled the ball and Brady threw a pick. So that's really where you're going to lie any kind of blame. That's the other big nitpick that I have. You turn the ball over. And we've always said and always maintained from day one, turnovers kill. Turnovers bring good teams to the level of the bad team. Turnovers allow good teams to play down to the level of a lesser team. Turnovers are the great equalizer in football. That's what's happened. That's what happened on Sunday. You still there? Matt, you still there? All right, Matt, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. Well, I'm actually looking forward to this one. Hello, Kat in Chicago.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm busy.
I'm glad to hear somebody's busy. I'm glad to be busier myself.
Yeah, good. Well, sorry I missed your first week, but I figured I'd give you a call today.
I'm glad you did. Thanks for taking the time, as always.
I think my nitpick is the pass rush, because I'm non-existent, pretty much.
Okay.
Not happy with how Chandler played in the preseason. And the PSW guys were talking earlier about it was a controlled pass rush or a contained pass rush. I think that's garbage.
Yeah.
yeah. I just don't think we have one.
Well, I'm gonna hold the jury out on it just yet. I think that provided we see a full or relatively full season with Chandler Jones, then I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt. But I'm thinking that what you're thinking must be also in the minds of at least some people around here. Otherwise, they would not have worked out Andre Carter yesterday.
Right. Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that. I don't know, there were a couple of preseason games where it looked like literally Chandler Jones was like windmilling the arms. And I don't know what was, you know, I don't know if he was trying a different technique, if he was trying to, you know, learn something new or what, but he kind of looks like he's just all over there to me. Like, I don't know if the body control is off or if he's thinking too much or I don't know, but it does not look natural. And he doesn't look like he's attacking with the tenacity that I would like him to have at this point. So
you know what? I'll try to make a point of watching him a little bit more specifically on Thursday, and I'll see if I can find that style that you're talking about, because I really didn't notice it. I'll be quite honest with you.
There was, I think it was the third preseason game that I really noticed it, and I was. It just looked weird.
Okay.
It was very strange.
All right. Fair enough.
My other thing is, all these people calling in about the Super Bowl, you've gotten calls. All the shows are getting these calls. People, enjoy the season.
I know. Like, I know.
We're only one game in.
I know.
Why are we already worried about the Super Bowl?
Well, because that's the focal point for people who are largely, I would say, bandwagon or fair weather fans who are just kind of sampling and they're not really into it. Like I know a lot of listeners are and a lot of the Patriot fans are who, you know, tune into our programming on a day in and day out basis. I don't want to denigrate anybody, but, you know, they just don't know any better, for lack of a better phrase. And so that's what they talk about because that's what everybody has in common, because that's the goal that everybody has in common.
Yeah, I know. It just people. Don't worry about the Super Bowl. Just relax, listen to the shows, and you'll learn something, and you'll enjoy the season more. And there you go.
There's no question. There's absolutely no question. This is a long ride. You know, it's not the sprint. It's the marathon, you know. That's a well-worn cliche, but it's true. And in this particular instance, this football team is going to develop into something else, because last year's did, the year before. I mean, 16, 17 weeks that they actually play, with the off week included, teams evolve. And so what when you're starting a season, you don't want the team to be in quote unquote, as we talked about in the opening article, you don't want them to be in midseason form. You want them to be efficient, but you also want things that you can and will work to improve upon. Sometimes talent alone is good enough to beat the opposition early in the year when you don't know as much about the other guy. But what you want to see is the learning curve begin. You need to create a floor, and you don't want the floor to be already 10 feet up in the ceiling. Does that make any sense? You want to start and build and then work your way up. So, yeah, when you get to week 7, 8, 9, 10, then you're talking about, all right, now we're getting a clear picture of what this team is, what they're going to be, what they are, and what they might be at the end of the year. And so then you can have some concern.
A good example of that is, if anybody watched the Philadelphia game last night, they came out and they,
smoking.
I mean, the speed and the just the sheer physicality of their game last night.
Yeah, that was Chip Kelly's offense, you know, really took, you know, and I was kind of surprised. It took Washington by surprise.
But how long are they going to be able to sustain that?
Well, that's exactly the point.
Right.
Teams in the NFL are smart. This is the pros. And these defensive coordinators and these players are going to catch up to it. It's like, you know, a couple of years ago when the read option, the zone read came into play, and now we're seeing just about almost every team out there with some kind of a zone read option package in the repertoire. We saw it from Tebow in the preseason. So every team has got it somewhere in their playbook, because it's the fad, and it's the change of pace thing that, you know, the NFL is using, that the college game brought to a great level, a very entertaining level. But rest assured, teams know how to defend the zone read now as well as they probably ever have and will continue to. So now that Chip Kelly's, you know, air raid offense, whatever you want to call it, from Oregon when he was the coach there, now that it's going to come to Philadelphia, it'll take them, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks. Teams are going to start catch up and learning what to do, and it'll be the same old thing. So the pro game evolves like the college game, but the pro game evolves at a much faster rate of speed.
Well, the other thing, too, about that is I wonder how, I mean, just in terms of durability of their players, it's not like college where you have that larger roster to draw from. Their team is, if, you know, you start off the season playing at that intensity and that speed,
mm-hmm.
I feel like there's a lot more opportunities for your guys to get injured.
Yeah.
And so there's something to be said. You know, don't freak out. We started a little slow, but there's definitely a lot to build on.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, I wasn't, like I said an hour ago, I'm not surprised that it was a struggle. You know, obviously a little disappointed from the fan point of view, but not surprised. I'm hoping against hope that they can at least continue to, you know, see a learning curve this week. But with the injuries, frankly, you know, and Jets picking up a little momentum, and I cannot underscore how much momentum can be carried from week to week in a win the way that they want it. Because I actually thought Tampa Bay out-jetsed the Jets last week. So because of that, I'm concerned about Thursday night, very much so. I could see Rex Ryan and the Jets coming here, and I can see them walking out of here with a win. I hate to say that. That's not my prediction yet because I want to give some serious thought to it tonight, but it wouldn't shock me.
Mm-hmm. Well, frightening.
Yeah, well, like I said, buckle in. You know, it's going to be a long ride, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, it will be.
All right,
Kat. It will definitely be a long season.
I'm glad you took the time today. Good to hear from you.
It's good to talk to you, too. Thanks, John.
Thanks. All right, we'll talk again. Kat in Chicago. She may be one of the most educated females on football that we ever have the privilege of talking to on this program. Is that right, Kevin? Wouldn't you say that?
What's that?
The Kat in Chicago has been one of the more educated female fans that we've had the privilege of talking to.
I think the most educated female.
Yeah, she's right up there. I mean, she could talk it with
the
best.
The ones that stick out to me are Kat in Chicago. We used to have Tiff in Wisconsin who used to
Tiff
call
in
on.
Wisconsin used to call in an email.
Yeah.
All the time. She used to send us emails.
And in my, like, 4 years here, those are the two that stick out.
Yeah, Tiff in Wisconsin.
Wise.
Where are you, Tiff, by the way?
Who knows?
She could check up on the rookie.
She could.
She could.
Go bring him a home-cooked meal.
Maybe. Maybe we have to do that. You know? He's toiling away as a, you know, lowly frosh student at Marquette.
He is pretty skinny.
No, he's thin. He's already gained the freshman 10, I think. He says doing nothing but eating starches in school.
Sounds good to me. That's all I did. Microwave pasta.
Absolutely. It's all right there, isn't it? Where did all the emails go? They just disappeared. Did you just erase something?
I didn't touch them. Hang on, let me look.
All right, you got to. Oh my goodness, that was that Fred that just erased every email that was in there? Attaboy, Fred. Let's see. Okay. Oh, that's it. Okay. I see. David just sent me the tweet. All right, good. I'm going to follow you now, David. So there you go. Right there. I'll follow you, and we're all good shape. All right, let's get to the Facebook thing so we can figure out what happened to the email. It just all disappeared here in a moment. Sven from Sweden. Sven, nice to hear from you. He sent a couple of Facebook posts here. He says, my nitpicking for this week is Patriot fans panicking over the game for ridiculous reasons. Anyway, I'm happy for the win. I also think Brady is taking too much heat for the receivers not being in the spot where they should. For example, Zach Sudfeld falling down. Eric, if Brady's throw in the Super Bowl was terrible, what word do you use for the passes Tebow throws? A lot worse than that. And I agree that the Super Bowl pass to Welker in the Super Bowl wasn't good. And he said, by the way, thanks for not being cheerleaders and doing some real reporting. Well, that's our pleasure, Sven, but it's also our job. So that's what we're going to do. I would agree with you, Sven. I think nitpicking the fans is a good nitpick for this week. Seems like most everyone... I mean, it seemed like most everyone expected more. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's okay to expect more, especially when you're led to believe you're going to get more. You're going to have more. But you really have to do the homework here, and you really have to follow along, and you really have to realize that this team isn't anywhere near as experienced, especially in a lot of the critical spots on this roster. It's not anywhere near experienced like they've had the last few years. And so because you're breaking in newbies, there's going to be a learning curve. I mean, if your first day on the job, are you expected to be as good on your job as someone who's been there for, say, 10 or 15 years? Of course not. Of course not. And your bosses aren't going to expect it, generally, aren't going to expect it either. And so you've got that expectation by these bosses here over really increasing that learning curve. There's a lot of pressure on these young guys, and they need to just relax. That's the big thing. They need to relax. Michael sends this. Eric's way too negative. 9-7, rip on Brady, pick on defense. What's next? Even Paul had a more positive outlook. Wow. I'm thinking that he's saying this tongue-in-cheek, but I don't know. Says, John, how about a minute on Texas football and Mac Brown? Ooh. No, I don't know that we want to go there. Strippers, you can help me out here, so I'll let you do that. You know, all I will say is that, you know, and I saw this tweeted earlier this, right after the game against BYU this past weekend. And for the uninitiated, yes, I'm a Longhorn alum. I saw somewhere, someone tweeted where, what do quarterbacks do? Or I was something along the lines of quarterbacks who, refuse to acknowledge the pressure in the pocket. they usually get sacked, right? Well, Mac Brown is doing nothing this week of acknowledging the pressure on him and his job performance. So what happens when you get pressured? You get sacked. And I think it's almost inevitable. I really do. I think it's almost inevitable. Did we fix the email? Oh, it's back. Thank you very much for that. Okay. Thank you very much, Kev. Okay, so here we go. This one comes from Fat Beaver. Okay, hello, Fat Beaver. Yo, Rook, glad to have you back again for another year. Clearly, Tompkins seems to be delivering at practice. Looks like he gets it in the film room, but I'm surprised at how many times Brady or McDaniels chose to target the young man. We all expected the first half of the season to be mostly focused on the running game, but knowing McDaniels is an aggressive OC, I'm intrigued at how he wants to combine the solid running game and an immature aerial offense. Good point. That's a good point. We know that he wants to throw the ball, yet we've seen in the preseason at least that they focused on running the game, the running ball. Maybe the running game isn't being emphasized as much as we thought it would be. They do try to balance. But maybe that was just not the intent. Maybe the intent was to try to strive for balance from the get-go, and they didn't quite get it that way. And now you've lost a running back, you know, so and you've lost a receiver. I don't think that they will favor one or the other. Although I made this mention last week, and I'll make it again here. Now's the time for a guy like LeGarrette Blount, I think, to step up. Certainly, Stephen Ridley's going to get the start again, I would think, and probably. I guess I wouldn't be shocked to see Blount, but I think he's going to get his fair share of carries on Thursday. I think he needs to show us what Tampa Bay saw in his first season, and that's the performance of a potential 1,000-yard rusher. You want to make a name for yourself? You want to make a play for more playing time? Now's the time. When other guys go down, step up. Jacob from Denmark. What do you think of Chandler Jones' performance against the Bills? I thought he had a couple of nice plays, but I expected more from him. Yeah, we kind of danced around that a little bit, Jacob. In fact, our last caller, Kat, in Chicago, wasn't terribly enamored with his performance. On the end, I thought that he probably could have had more pressure, but when they did move him to tackle, we did see the pocket collapse somewhat, forcing Manuel out of it. So I think actually moving him in a tackle probably surprised Buffalo as much as anybody else, because he's not a normal tackle. He used some of his quickness and speed to get through the bulk of the offensive line there for the Bills. I kind of liked the move. I think that may have been the Patriots' most effective pass rush on Sunday. Maybe we'll see them change it up again. Terrence from Long Island says, guys, one big in one league this week, lost close one in another, because a certain someone told me to start Sudfeld over Jared Cook. Oh, okay. I'm guessing that's probably a fantasy question. I'm going to leave that for the fantasy guys. TG and NJ, John and Squiddy, the nits are too many and obvious to mention. Is there anything good we can take away from this opening game? Absolutely, TG. They won. Better than an L. They won the game. There's 16 of these, okay? 16. You won it, move on to the next. It's that simple. It was a divisional game, too. Let me add that. Divisional game. I know fans are used to going 5-1 at worst within the AFC East, but I think we can all agree that the division seems to have crept a little closer to New England. And maybe New England has come back to the pack somewhat. But I think most everybody thought going into the year that Miami would be improved. Jets might be a little worse. And we didn't really know about Buffalo because they got a new coaching staff and a rookie quarterback. We didn't really know. And I thought Buffalo was very competitive. And I think Buffalo will probably continue to be very competitive if they can avoid the injury bug. And again, that's a big if. I like Manuel as a quarterback. I like Stevie Johnson as receiver, and I think their 1-2 punch at running back between Spiller and Jackson is as good as there may be depth-wise in the NFL. So there's every reason to think that the Bills will be competitive and not get blown out and win their fair share of some games. They won the game, and it was a divisional game. Let's move on, right? Josh from Charlottesville. Bills game really gave me doubts about the success of the Patriots season. Do they always play us tough? They do always play us tough, but if that's how poorly we do against a team with a rookie QB and coach, then what are the Falcons, Saints, and Broncos going to do to us? A truly scary thought, I know. I was amazed that Sudfeld didn't have a single catch that game. I'm aware that he had some trouble with his hamstring, but how far into the game did he even pull it? Could they be trying to use the tight ends less in these first few games to try to preserve their health for the road ahead, or are we in serious trouble without Gronk? Says, anyway, I'm calling this game 24-17 Patriots win. I hope I get that yearbook. Anyway, love the show. Glad you're back. Thanks, Josh. We'll go through predictions again tomorrow rather than Thursday, because there won't be a playbook here on Thursday because Thursday's game day. So we'll have the game day schedule of the pregame social and the postgame. To that end, I don't know that we're in serious trouble without Gronk. I think they're just kind of setting the table for his return. I don't think it comes Thursday, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him against Tampa the following week because of the 10-day layoff between games coming up. So maybe it will be. A lot of it probably depends on how it goes in practice. If Gronk does take 4 to 6 weeks before he comes back, then I would expect to see them, work the waiver wire or see who else is out there. You know, bring in a body. I don't know. I mean, maybe they actually try to bring back Daniel Fells because I think that conversation has occurred. Maybe Jake Ballard. I mean, I know that he visited with a couple of other teams after the Patriots let him go, so I don't know if he's even available, but it's possible. Al from Paramus, New Jersey, says, my over-under on how many games Amendola will play was 8. Wrap him in bubble wrap. Why should anyone be surprised? 8 would have been a little low for me, but I can understand why you would say that, Al. I definitely can understand that. He just, he's been injury prone. He was injury prone. That was the big knock, and that's why a lot of Patriot fans were upset when, in effect, it turned out to be a trade for Welker and bringing in Amendola. So I get it. But let's not kill him yet over just 1 week either. Now, if this groin seems to be a problem that's going to keep him out for 2, 3, 4 weeks, then I think it's likely that we might, hear some grumblings, and I think it's probably likely that you'll hear some real criticism, and it'll probably be warranted until he can get out there. And if his groin is torn, and let me just say this, I don't know that that's the case, but I do know that sometimes groin strains, if you have quick, sudden movements, can become groin tears. Knowing a little bit about sports and anatomy and having had similar things happen to me in the past. If he's got the tear and they've got to lay him out because of it, but they're not reporting it, then this is where the Patriots playing things close to the vest on injuries really does their players, does their team, does their organization no good. If a guy's hurt, you got to say it. Then you're really not doing your own player any good in the court of public opinion. And the court of public opinion in your own backyard is what should count more. The Patriots don't operate that way, and we know that. And if you follow this team for any length of time, you know that as well. They don't operate that way because they don't care. They don't think it's anybody else's business. They only have the best interest of the team. With every move that they make, that's what we're told. That's what we're basically having branded into our backsides every season. And so that's fine. They don't care about the individual repercussions here, but that's what will happen. So I'm hoping that, and plus, how the Patriots like to sort of play and tweak their thumb their noses up at the league when it comes to the injury report every week. They've been doing this for years, which is why the injury report every week, it used to be one of the most important things that we read here on the program every Wednesday. Of course, now it's out on Tuesday because of the early game this week, but it used to be one of the, I remember when we first launched this show back in 01, we'd stay on because the injury report came out at 4 p.m. Eastern time, which is the time that we would be going off the air with this program. We'd stay on the air for a few extra 5-10 minutes until the injury report came out because it used to be that important until the Patriots, and more specifically Coach Belichick, decided to thumb their nose at the league. And that's what they've been doing. And the Patriots have had been called out on the carpet from time to time for, shall we say, their reporting skills of who really is injured and who isn't. And it's not that the Patriots are giving wrong information. They just are giving vague information that can be interpreted any way you want it to. But that's what the rules say they can do, and so that's what they're doing. There's no rule violation here. But in effect, that can whip around and hurt your own players. If a player is hurt and people are wondering, well, how come he's not in there? Is he just wussing out because he's got a pulled hammy? We don't know. And that's how it comes back to hurt your own team. This one comes from Sean in Vancouver. Last week, I basically said the Bills could win or the Patriots beat themselves. My major nitpick is New England made the mistakes to do that. Ridley put the ball on the ground without even being touched. A lot of passes were off the mark. We don't know if it's Brady misfiring or the wide receivers not running the precise route. Tompkins missed a huge reception by not bringing both feet in bounds. Sudfeld caused a key interception that changed the momentum of the game. Brady fumbled inside the 1 yard line. Even the very reliable Mayo had a boneheaded penalty with a late hit. That's also a good nitpick. Fortunately, the Bills made some errors themselves, mostly through penalties, and the Patriots escaped with a last 5 second victory. Outstanding points, Sean. All of them worth mentioning, and the Bills' mistakes probably kept them from winning the game. And they played well enough to actually win the game. Says, my concern is, what will the Patriots' offensive game plan be on Thursday night? Three offensive players stepped up on Sunday. Only one of them will probably play against the Jets. I think the Jets' defensive game plan will be to try to strip Ridley, double cover Edelman, because there won't be anybody else on the field for New England that has shown they can catch. You have any other suggestions as to what they could do offensively to win their home opener? Run the ball. Not necessarily with Ridley. I'm telling you, LeGarrette Blount. Pick up the slack. That's one suggestion I have. The other suggestion is you know, target the rookies again. Let's get Tompkins on the same page. Let's go back to him. Let's see if he's got. We didn't see Aaron Dobson because he was inactive, but he was out there practicing yesterday and today, so maybe Dobson actually gets into the game. Maybe he can get some time. Let's find out. Brian in Longview, Texas. John, glad to hear your show again since it's a fresh new season. You're not missing out on the great Texas heat down here in Longview. I'm going to nitpick on the entire team, truthfully. I really feel like we should have lost that game because we couldn't take care of the ball from Tom Brady. Fumbled the snap all the way down to the offensive team. Defense still needs work, of course, because Buffalo's hurry up was kicking their butts. Luckily enough for the Patriots, Buffalo has a rookie coach who will learn when not to use his hurry-up offense when you have a lead in the fourth quarter with 4 minutes left and some change. That's a great point. Instead, they had a quick three and out, gave Tom plenty of time to do what he does best in crunch time. It's the first game, and I know they'll work a lot of things out, but it's going to be a bumpy season with a lot of these new guys in situations they are not experienced with just yet. I know they'll turn it around because if anybody can, Bill and his staff will get the job done. All right, good email, Brian. Pretty well thought out, down the middle of the road. You didn't go off the deep end. Well done. Mike in Florida. John, how can you say it would have been an easy game for the Pats without turnovers and not come in on Buffalo's turnovers that led directly to the majority of our points? Mike, that's actually an extra point, an excellent extra point. If the Patriots don't turn the ball over, the Bills still have to shoot themselves in the foot with the 10 penalties and their own 2 turnovers to make it the wide score. If both teams are playing on an even keel with no turnovers and, you know, 2 or 3 penalties, few penalties, then it's probably still a close game. I would argue, though, that because the Patriots fumbled one that was returned for a score, that the Patriots still probably win the game for right around 9 or 10 points. But it's certainly a 2-possession game that goes down to the probably last half of the fourth quarter at the very least. So there you go. Anyway, you brought up a good point, though, Mike. Let's see. Do we have any others here? This one. Oh, Max in San Diego. Sorry, I was on the phone, lost the connection, so I'm sending you an email. Question, do players who guarantee victory against the Patriots ever learn from the way the Steelers' safety Anthony Smith got embarrassed by the 07 Pats? Now, granted, they were an otherworldly team compared to the team we have now, but seriously, I think we're going to let the New York jokes come in here to the Razor and let them just walk all over us like Wilkerson so guarantees. And by the way, yeah, he did that this week. We're going to be 2-0. So what? We're hurt, I get it. So are they. I know our team, and I know that was an ugly win Sunday, but Brady is one hell of a warrior. Will Fork's a hungry beast. Bill is one hell of a coach, so I don't believe that we're going to allow the jokes to come in here and walk all over us. All right. There you go. Says, I hope you'll broadcast from 100-plus fan club here in San Diego at Players Sports Bar. Ooh. All right, well, we have an invitation someday to come to San Diego. Thank you, Max. Appreciate that. Looks like USMC. Oh, Semper Fi. Good job. You bring up some good points. I think that teams do, to an extent, remember what happened in the past, but 07 is so far ago. I mean, I don't think anybody here other than Brady and Wilfork have any real relevance with 07. So I can't tell you how much relevance there might be there. Back to the phones. Melvin in Tennessee. Hey, Melvin, you're in the playbook.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, Melvin.
Not much, but, well, just to talk about the game a little bit, one of the most troubling things I was watching it was I saw the defense kind of battle with them with, you know, that 10-0 deficit for a while, and the offense kind of played back and forth with them, but still just missing that. Of course, I know it's game one, week one. Everybody's trying to, you know, get set and figure out some stuff that they like to do. But during those times in the game, anybody who plays sports, you know you got to finish them off right there. And they played around with them way too long.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you know, with that 17-0 or even 13-0 with, you know, with a, especially with the rookie quarterback playing Tom Brady, you know, probably would have got her even more rattled than anything. But, you know, you had that Ridley fumble and they ran it back. Now it's, they feel like it's a 0-0 ball game.
Mm-hmm.
So just globally looking back from that aspect, and especially going back to, you know, last year somewhat of having trouble finishing out games and playing around with bad teams. You've got, so they talked about it all last year, especially before they head, well, 2 years ago before they head to the Super Bowl with playing 60 minutes
mm-hmm.
and playing good football throughout. So they're going to have to figure out how to do this. And with all these injuries adding up, I'm concerned now. I really didn't have any type of worry ahead playing the Jets. I mean, they're the Jets, but it's really not them. Of course not. It's us. You know, it's just with the injuries adding up and, you know, you're going to have to go back to the rookie receivers. That's basically what I could imagine what Rex Ryan's going to do is, you know, show me that you have some receivers that can catch the ball.
Yep.
And with Hooman, you know, being since we like the tight end so much and he's just really not getting involved with the passing game this last year and now it's more of a concern. Can he go down the field? Can he contribute in the pass game? Blocking is good. I like that, but this is a passing offense. You've got to get down the field and get up and catch some passes. So
no question. They need to perform. But you're right. I think Rex Ryan will probably make those rookies perform. That now's the time. It's time to step up and do it.
Right. And that's the only thing I have to say. But it's a time to shine now.
Absolutely.
Thursday night football, everybody's going to be watching. So if you got to get out there and make your name known, rookies or not, you got to be out there, go out there, execute, and win the game. Because if not, I think, yeah, they're going to know to shut down the run, and they're going to try to double-team Edelman. So, you've got to get out there and make some plays.
No question.
With all these injuries.
No question. You got to run the ball. You got to run the ball and hold on to the ball too. So I think you know the Jets will come after hard, Stephen Ridley, without a doubt, and try to strip him. So he's got to hold on to it.
Hey, one more thing about Blunt that I got to say was I know everybody was getting on to him a lot about the those first couple of preseason games, but like I said, you're going in there running against the second teams and running around the field and doing everything like that. Let's see what you did against the first team. You know, your average went down to what? 15 yards.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get in there, pounded up against the first team too, because you know it's a whole lot easier going out there looking good against the twos. But what can you do with the one?
Right.
Go out there and make that same impact with the one. So
yeah. Good
I'm
point.
I'm gonna be paying attention to him too.
Yep.
So that's my whole point. But I continue listening to the show.
Thanks, Melvin. Good stuff.
No problem.
As always, good outlook there by Melvin. All right, couple of quick more emails. Pete in Augusta, Maine, nitpicks. Brady's consistency, Tlaib keeping the play in front of him. He's not a rookie. Worried about Ridley, don't have confidence as a fan. Blunt disappointed, had high hopes for him. Come on, man, these are all veterans. We need better from these guys, so forget the rookies, huh? Defense good, not great, need to depend on the defense and running game more till we can get the passing game up to speed. I could not have put it more succinctly myself, Pete. Defense is good, not great. Need to depend on the defense and running game more until we can get the passing game up to speed. Excellent. Here we go. Greetings from an expat abroad. This is Joseph from the Czech Republic. This may be a first from the Czech Republic, Kev. He says, a win is a win is a win. That being said, We're in trouble if we can't get some of these rookies in line. It's early. I'm not going to panic, but these close games take me on an emotional roller coaster, which I'm not used to. And I see, I think that's actually a very typical point of view for a lot of Patriots fans, no matter where you are on this planet. Here's another typical point of view. He says, F the Jets. From Patriots fans, of course. Oh, my goodness. Good stuff, Joseph. I appreciate that. Thank you. Let's put a little levity in the situation, right? Nick in Victoria, British Columbia. A lot of Canada coming through today. Wondering what the hell is Tom supposed to do Thursday? He has Edelman, but then no one to give the ball to. So do we see this as a defense coming out party? They have to win this game and take with takeaways and scores. Thanks. Hard to argue that right now. Running game and defense. That might be the way to do it. If you can control the clock, and let's go back to playing some smash mouth football, shall we? Shauna in Florida, who used to be in Las Vegas. Oh, this is Officer Shauna. She's in Florida now. She says, Eric, why are you so arrogant about having the privilege to attend every game in person? Don't be fooled into thinking that because you saw it live, it makes your opinion or perspective better than, say, what Eldridge saw on the screen. I usually don't write in, especially about negative things, but you don't have to be nasty to the callers. We know you're being objective. We appreciate that. As fans, we're supposed to be fanboys. Don't hate us for being that way. We won't hate you for being objective. Give us your professional opinion without the condescending tone. I should have read this when he was here, huh? I'll be honest with you, Shauna. I don't think he was actually trying to be condescending. I'll defend Eric for a moment. I think what he was trying to do is make sure that his point was getting across. And sometimes when Eric emphasizes things, it comes across in a condescending tone. But also, sometimes callers, in this particular instance, and believe me, I love Melvin. Melvin's great.
It was Eldridge.
Excuse me, Eldridge. We just talked to Melvin, didn't we? Sometimes Eldridge rambles and he doesn't listen to what's going on. But I try to give him every opportunity to get his point in. And so sometimes there's just a disconnect. So I don't think Eric deserves to be completely thrown under the bus. But I understand your point. Robin in Alaska says, with the stink of that win lingering and with the nitpick glasses on, I think you guys might be so in the moment you've forgotten an important rule of thumb. The more you fight the callers, the more callers want to call fight. Yes, that's very true. That's a very good point, Robin. Breathe, especially Eric. And with that, keep up the otherwise good work. Been a fan of the show since the start. Thank you, Robin in Alaska. All right. See, that's a good way to put it right there. Good job out of you. A couple of quick other, I think I had a couple of Facebook posts here. Tim says, I love that Eric is getting taken to task. Andy has been rubbing off on him the last couple of years. Just because he's at the games and cashing a check doesn't make him any more of an expert than Eldridge or anyone else. There's a difference between charting incompletions and sitting in the coaching room. Here's a word of the day for you. Supercilious. Leave it to Tim. He says, nitpick one of many, but Brady took some shots. Let's tighten up the protection. Not lighten it up. Tighten up the protection for the team's biggest asset. This is good. This is fun. I like this. This is all good stuff right here. Little levity to break up the program with. Tweet comes through here from Michael, whose Twitter handle is @PatsLondon. Good stuff, Michael. Hi, John. I think it was the expectations of meeting a rookie quarterback and our wide receivers flashing in preseason that led fans to panic. Okay. I think that's as good a one to end with as any because you're right. Quarterback, you know, rookie quarterback, Patriots always have success generally. Always have success against rookie quarterbacks. And then the flashes of good play that we saw from the rookie wideouts in the preseason. Okay, I understand that. But let's leave it with this. You just can't take what you see in the preseason seriously. You just can't. Can we please remember this now? I'm sure we'll have this conversation again about this time next year. But try to take that into consideration overall. That just, you know, preseason and the regular season are just different. It's just the way it is. All right. Thanks for everybody taking part today. We had a really busy show. Great participation on the phones. Wonderful participation via social media and on the email. Outstanding. Don't forget, Twitter follow at JR Broadcaster. Get it. Let's go. Same patch time, same patch channel tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern. And tomorrow, Manish Mehta from the New York Daily News will join us on the JETS. And Russell S. Baxter, pro football guru himself, in the playbook, 2 o'clock Eastern time. It's must-listen-to radio on Patriots.com radio. Fantasy football, next.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.